Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Herbal Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. The call-in number is 914-338-0695. Now, tonight is really, it's a total hoot. Tonight's title is Chest Pain, Medical Emergency or Over-Medication. And I have to say, now that I'm a retired physician, I have lots of time to look into all the things I wondered about as a practicing medical doctor. And one thing that puzzled me was that once a person was diagnosed with chest pain, their life was turned upside down. They would go to the cardiologist, for sure, and the cardiologist would recommend all types of medication, which, of course, they would take. And from then on, man, they had constant chest pain. And even worse than before. And it would be in the emergency room like every 2 weeks. And finally, they would just stop going to the emergency room. But it's just an incredible life of misery. I had one patient who had excellent insurance. And she went to the cardiologist, was started on the cardiac rehab program even, got all the proper tests and medications, and she was just incredible, a lot of misery with chest pain every 2 weeks, going to the emergency room. So, of course, there was nothing I could do. She was seeing a specialist, the expert, the one who knew all there was to know, and was doing all that could be done, according, of course, to the standard of care. But there were other patients in my practice who had occasional chest pain, and maybe a heart attack had been ruled out, and they decided that, it wasn't my heart, I guess I don't need to see the cardiologist. And so I would use, natural methods on them. And the chest pain just went away. And chest pain is a lot of different causes. Sometimes it's indigestion. Sometimes it's muscle pain. Sometimes it's anxiety. Sometimes it can be lung pain. And I quickly had stopped believing in medications for anxiety of any kind because they just didn't work. And the patients were getting, well, I would give an anxiety medicine. They would just get more symptoms, and their life would get more miserable. And since I was a solo practice doctor, that meant my life got more miserable. So the patients, though, who followed the standard pathway of drugs for whatever their chest pain was, had persistent chest pain and ultimately would often go on to develop a cardiac source for the chest pain. And the patient and I would be on pins and needles, nervously waiting for the time when the harmless chest pain would develop into something serious, a.k.a. cardiac pain. So I'd like to share with you tonight, based on my observation as a doctor, as a practicing physician when I was practicing, and research I've done, really a possible scenario that would explain the cause and effect of this whole process. and it was difficult to imagine, but as a physician, heart attack and cardiac chest pain is kind of out there like this boogeyman that can be stunned on a patient at any time. And as a doctor, you have to accurately determine, is this cardiac pain or is this not cardiac pain? And oh my God, if you guessed that it was not cardiac when it really was cardiac, you could get sued and all kinds of awful things could happen. So it was really just an uncomfortable thought, even having a patient in the medical practice that had chest pain, because that was just a ticking time bomb. Say nothing of the fact that as a solo practice family physician, whenever my patients had a problem after hours, they would call me and interrupt my sleep, which was, for me, was devastating, because sleeping through the night was like really, really important, because then I could get up the next day and work for 10 hours. But if my sleep was interrupted, then that would, you know, make me very tired. So my waking hours were dedicated to finding therapies that would allow the patient to sleep through the night and allow me to sleep through the night as well. So let's take a look at the magnitude of the problem. I mean, chest pain sounds bad enough as it is, but how big is it really? Well, according to the Mayo Clinic, you know, I always use standard sources. You know, find these numbers here. So according to the Mayo Clinic, 73 million Americans suffer from non-cardiac chest pain, maybe one time. Now, I just told you, and we know, that non-cardiac chest pain can become cardiac chest pain. So 73 million is just kind of a benchmark number, so we'll use that as the number of people with chest pain. Well, only 800,000 people a year die from cardiovascular disease. That would be heart attack and stroke and any kind of blood vessel disease you can imagine. So that's a pretty broad category, this 800,000. In terms of other 800,000, close to maybe 300,000 or 400,000 actually die of a heart disease. So that would be about one person in 160. So if you have, if you take everyone with chest pain, then one person in 160 might have a cardiac source of chest pain. In other words, a heart attack as a source of their chest pain. And the most often diagnosis, according to Mayo Clinic, is reflux. Now, this actually agrees very nicely with the figures from WebMD. They've had some figures, and their figures are about one person in 500 will actually die of a heart attack. And so one person in 500 actually dying, and it's pretty close to one in 150. You know, it doesn't sound very close, but it's less than 1%. So let's see what those numbers get us. It turns out that one in 500 people who go to the emergency room with chest pain will die of a heart attack. And so what happens in the emergency room is the person shows up, oh, my God, I have chest pain. And pretty much 100% of those people will get the 8-hour treatment. And the 8-hour treatment means 8 hours is spent doing tests to determine if the heart attack is, not the heart attack, but if the chest pain is from the heart, if the heart is the source of this chest pain. And this involves a chest x-ray, EKG, enzymes, which is a blood test, a series of blood tests, possibly a CAT scan, stress test, echocardiogram, and it takes about 8 hours. And this costs about $4,800 per emergency room visit. And this is what happens to 65% of people who have chest pain. And if you take this on a basis of 500 people, that's 325 people, and a revenue to the emergency room of $1.6 million to examine someone with indigestion and determine that they don't need to be admitted and that the chest pain is not of cardiac origin, therefore not potentially life-threatening. Okay, so it's $1.6 million to tell these people they have indigestion. Then you have 35% of these 500 who are actually admitted to the hospital, discharged 3 days later with a diagnosis of indigestion, among other things. And that's about $12,000 per individual. So for this group of 500, that comes to about $1.9 million. Now, 3.5% of chest pain is actually a heart attack. And at $18,000 per heart attack, that means they I'm guessing uncomplicated heart attack here, no open heart surgery, nothing fancy. $18,000 per person, which is going to be $229,000 because not many people are going to have this. So it's $229,000 revenue for the hospital, and 5% of those will die. Now, when people die, obviously the hospital gets paid four times as much, right? So it's really one death in every 500. So that's only $72,000. So if you add it all up, divide, take the ratio, whatever, only 7.7% of the revenue the hospital gets on chest pain is billed for actually treating a heart attack. The rest, the other 92% of the revenue, is received for them pretending that whatever the person has could be a heart attack and embarking on an extended, just a plethora of tests. Now, when a person is discharged from the hospital with chest pain, let's say it was not cardiac, well, of course, the emergency room doctor is going to give therapy for whatever it was that he determined to be the cause of the chest pain. So let's take a look at drugs that cause chest pain, and I'll point out the ones that are actually used in the treatment of chest pain. And I think that we're going to see a really fascinating pattern here. Okay, time for station identification. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's a very important thing to do because antibiotics do kill 63,000 Americans every year. So be sure you get your copy of this very important report. It is free now, but it may not be free for long. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. Okay. Well, I just have to tell you, the list of drugs that cause chest pain is really, really, really long. So when you go on these drugs, what they do, you know, who the heck might use them, and then I'm going to talk to you about the natural ways of preventing chest pain, number one, and number two, dealing with it when it does show up. Okay. So, as always, we use regular medical sources for these. This comes from the PDR, not the one your doctor gets for free, but the one he's got to pay $100 for. He's got to really shoot his wad. It's called Guide to Drug Interactions, Side Effects, and Indications. And what we're interested in tonight is side effects. So all the drugs that have a side effect of chest pain, that's what we're looking at here. And they put them alphabetical, so we'll go alphabetical. So first is Advair. Now, Advair is a medication, an inhaled medication, used for the treatment of asthma. This is often prescribed when it's determined that the source of the chest pain is not cardiac, but is in the lungs. So the person will get this medication to treat their lung-related chest pain, and of course, you guessed it, will bring on yet more chest pain. Then we have Allegra D. Allegra D is a, it's generic now, but back in the day, it was the most expensive antihistamine available. And so it's a very common allergy drug, but it also gives chest pain. And so Allegra D is a drug that's prescribed to people who have, like, seasonal allergies. And when is the seasonal allergy period? It's the spring, like April, May, and it's the fall, like September, October, and a little into November, depending on where you live. What's the significance of this? The significance of this is I noticed in my practice that chest pain seemed to really skyrocket in the fall and continued to escalate through Christmas and then would kind of tail off, which is very interesting. You could attribute that to holiday food and holiday eating, but you could also attribute it to the use of certain seasonal drugs, in this case, Allegra D. The next drug is Ceftin. Ceftin is a common antibiotic. This is given actually to children for ear infections. It's given to adults for respiratory infections and sometimes even skin infections. And in addition to giving rise to resistant bacteria, it can also cause chest pain. Now, this means that if Ceftin is prescribed as instructed by the prescribing information in a therapeutic dose, a person can take this drug and develop chest pain. And with antibiotics, a lot of times the chest pain shows up weeks after the drug is stopped. So it's not necessarily going to occur at the time you're taking the drug. But once you take this antibiotic, Ceftin, which is in the class called cephalosporins, those of you who are interested in such things, you become a candidate for chest pain. And what does chest pain mean? Chest pain means the $4,600 emergency room evaluation experience. That's what it means. Then there's flow vent discus. Now, flow vent is an inhaled steroid, and this is used for asthmatics. Also, there's another similar steroid called Nasacort, which is sprayed up the nose, and this is used for people who have nasal allergies. And either of these can cause chest pain, basically chest pain serious enough to send someone to the emergency room for the, you guessed it, $4,600 evaluation. And then we have the flu vaccine. And there are several different brands of the flu vaccine, and many of them do cause chest pain. And again, the chest pain, the peak chest pain period in my practice coincided with flu vaccine season. So it coincided with that September to December window there. So this is very interesting that the flu vaccine causes chest pain so serious that a person has to go to the emergency room and submit to the $4,800 8-hour evaluation, or even worse, stay for the 3-day, $12,000 possible cardiac evaluation. Now, there's another cream called Aldera cream. This is a cream used for basal cell cancer and for genital warts. So if you have a basal cell carcinoma, your doctor might recommend this cream, and you might put it on your basal cell cancer, which is a very small area. I'm not talking about smearing it all over your body. A very small area, and when used as directed, can cause chest pain leading to an emergency room visit, as I said, the $4,600 or $12,000 evaluation. Then we have Ambien. Ambien is very interesting. Ambien is a sleeping pill. So if you take Ambien as directed, this is regular amounts, no overdose, no excessive use, regular, just take it as prescribed, and the doctor is a competent doctor prescribing it as directed, you can expect, taking Ambien, that you will develop chest pain severe enough for you to go to the emergency room and require an evaluation to see if you have a heart attack. Now, Ambien, to cloud the matter further, is also associated with sudden death. So you take your Ambien, you go to the emergency room with chest pain, and you suddenly drop dead. So was it the Ambien, or was it a heart attack? And the answer is, we really are not ever told. However, it's likely that it's most likely the Ambien, and then, of course, it's labeled as a heart attack because that diagnosis does pay a lot more. The compensation is much different. And again, also, if it's a heart attack, then it kind of lets the Ambien off the hook, and we can just do more walks for the cure. So that's Ambien. Now, another twist to the Ambien is you could come into the hospital with chest pain from whatever cause, and they can decide, well, you know what, you're in the hospital, it's kind of noisy, you can't sleep, so let's give you Ambien to help you sleep while you're in the hospital. And what does that do? That takes your chest pain to another level, and now you're in for the long haul. No short 8-hour evaluation for you, no discharge after 2 or 3 days, nope. Now you're in for the duration, as they say. So that's Ambien. Now, another drug that causes chest pain worthy of evaluation is Aricept. Now, Aricept is the darling drug, which is the Hail Mary, our only hope, our last hope for treating Alzheimer's disease. And so Aricept also causes chest pain and the perception of heart problems. And so, again, you'll have a person go see the doctor, maybe they'll come with their 40-something-year-old child. The child will say, hey, mom's forgetful, can you help us? The doctor says, oh, of course I can. Have some Aricept. And a few months later, mom's in the emergency room with chest pain, and of course we can't let her go home. We have to make sure this is not a heart attack, or in medical terms, we have to rule out an MI. It's called rule out MI, or ROMI is the acronym for it. So that's Aricept. Then we have Atacand, and this is almost scandalous. Atacand is an ACE inhibitor used for blood pressure. Yep, you got that right, blood pressure. So why do you treat blood pressure? Well, you treat blood pressure to prevent chest pain and heart attack, of course. But Atacand, a blood pressure medication, a very popular one too, causes chest pain and sends people to the emergency room for chest pain and increases their chances of meeting the $4,500 evaluation. And so, of course, the patient who's treating their blood pressure, their feeling is, okay, I'm going to give up 3 hours of my life every 3 months to go to the doctor to get a refill of my blood pressure medication, to get everything checked to make sure it's okay. And I'm going to take my pill every single day. And in exchange for giving up those 12 hours a year, every year, to be on blood pressure medications, in exchange, I'm not going to have, or I'm going to reduce my chances of having chest pain or a heart attack that could interrupt my activity unexpectedly. And it turns out, no, that's not the deal. That's not the way it works. So, shocking, but that's the deal. Then we have Avandia, which is diabetic medication, same deal. Why would you take it? Well, you take it so you don't get chest pain. You don't get those complications of diabetes. You can live a quiet and orderly life and engage in whatever activity you choose without being interrupted by chest pain or heart attack or problems. Well, that's not the case. If you take Avandia, you're increasing your chances of ending up in an emergency room for the $4,800 8-hour evaluation if you're lucky, or more likely the $12,000 3-day evaluation. Then we have Avapro. Again, another blood pressure medication, an ACE inhibitor. These are very popular drugs now because they're felt to be without risk or with a very good side effect profile. But one of the side effects is, of course, chest pain. And then we have Axid. Now, Axid is very interesting. Axid is a drug used to treat upset stomach, indigestion. So when those 65% of people who are determined by the emergency room to have indigestion as a cause of their pain, and after the $4,800 evaluation, they're often sent home with Axid and told to take this to keep the pain under control, when actually what happens, it makes the pain worse. And so this is really just an incredible thing. So, of course, if the person gets more pain, they might even call their doctor. Doctor will say, you know what, take an extra two of those Axid and see if that calms it down, which of course it won't. And that person ends up in the emergency room and it's like, man, you know, we took that Axid, it didn't work. It really seems like a heart attack. I think we need to keep you for the 3 days to make to really make sure and do some extra tests. And then you got the $18,000 3-day stay instead of the $12,000 3-day stay, all because of a little indigestion pill. And then we have Captopril, yet another ACE inhibitor. Another blood pressure medication designed so the doctors are told, and patients are told this too, that this medication is important to take to control blood pressure. The person won't have to have the risk of chest pain or cardiac pain, when actually it's just the opposite. This increases chest pain. And then there's Catapress TTS. Now, Catapress TTS is a clonidine patch, so it's a patch. And Catapress is the drug of choice when someone comes in the emergency room with chest pain and their blood pressure is high. You immediately put a Catapress patch on them to bring the blood pressure down. And supposedly it works in 10 minutes to an hour and lowers the blood pressure. But wait, it causes chest pain. So what does that do? You put the Catapress patch on, chest pain worsens, like, oh my God, it must be the heart. I think we need to keep you a little longer. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, doctors are just doing this deliberately, but this is the standard of care. This is what doctors are trained to do. This is the protocol that they're actually instructed, even commanded to follow. So if a doctor deviates from this protocol, and you've got everyone in the emergency room looking over his shoulder saying, hey, wait a minute, why didn't you put a Catapress patch on that guy? You know, you should have done that. Well, that was the standard of care, man. You didn't listen to that protocol. I don't know what kind of doctor you are. You must be incompetent. I'm going to report you. And so it's all this back talk and, you know, mumble, mumble, mumble in the background. And so every doctor is aware that, you know, the walls have eyes and is really reluctant to deviate from these protocols that are, I guess the word would be not only self-serving, but self-fueling. So, once you follow the chest pain protocol, then what are you going to get? Well, more chest pain. Then you're going to do a follow chest pain protocol some more, then you're going to get more chest pain. So it becomes this incredible incredible cycle. And then we have, of course, famously Celebrex. Celebrex is the drug for musculoskeletal pain, so muscle pain, arthritis pain. That's what Celebrex is for. And so if you have someone who has, you determine that this is not heart pain, and we'll give them Celebrex, we think it's really muscle pain, then boing, Celebrex causes chest pain in 1.9% of all people who take it. And not only that, but Celebrex actually does cause a heart attack. So if you give someone Celebrex, you could have them coming back with a real heart attack when they left the emergency room with just a little muscle pain. So that's very interesting. And that is Celebrex. It's a class of drug called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. So this is an anti-inflammatory drug, reduces inflammation, but it causes chest pain. Then we have Celexa, our drug is to help us not be depressed anymore, a nice SSRI. This causes chest pain, sends you to, right to the emergency room for your $4,800 evaluation. Then, of course, we have Cialis. Cialis is a treatment for erectile dysfunction. And there are you guys out there who might be taking Cialis, and you might feel that Cialis is well worth the emergency room trip for chest pain for a mere ticket of $4,800. I can't speak for that. Maybe so. But Cialis is a treatment for erectile dysfunction, and it does cause chest pain. We'll send you to the emergency room for the $4,800 invasive experience filled with needles and x-rays and dangerous injectable dyes. And then we have our favorite, Cipro. Cipro causes chest pain, and that's just, you know, it's really a bad actor. It's kind of like a bad penny. And it's been showing up on our list for quite a few illnesses that it seems to cause. But Cipro, taken as directed by your doctor in therapeutic amounts, nothing excessive, will cause chest pain and send you to the emergency room for the $4,800 evaluation and maybe even the $12,000 three-day experience. Then we have Quinarol. Quinarol is just a plain pain pill. Many people take it for their arthritis, and again, it causes chest pain. And then we have Coric. Coric is a heart drug, and it causes chest pain in 17% of people who take it. How about that? So if your doctor is recommending Coreg for your heart condition or your hypertension or whatever, there's a 17% chance, which is pretty darn high. Because it's not the 17%. Most of these chances are 17% per year of use. And so that's a pretty high chance of ending up in the emergency room, interrupting your weekend or whatever other activity you had planned, so you can submit to a series of what some might call torture, needles and tests and x-rays to determine the true origin of your chest pain. And, of course, as always, the drug is never suspected. That is not a suspect. Then, of course, there's Cozaar. Cozaar is another ACE inhibitor, another medication to lower blood pressure. And then there's diuregesic transdermal. What is diuregesic? Diuregesic is a super-duper strong narcotic, and it's applied in a patch for slow release to give pain relief over time. But what it does is it causes chest pain, and it causes chest pain so severe that, you know, people do need that emergency room evaluation. And so this is how, by the way, $1 worth of medication can cause, on average, $3 worth of intervention, medical intervention. Because not everyone who gets, say, the diuregesic transdermal patch is going to get chest pain, but many will. And on average, it's going to be a tripling of the drug cost is what it's going to come down to. Then there's Dynacirc, which is a blood pressure pill, and it causes chest pain as well. And so many of the drugs that are used to prevent heart attacks, prevent chest pain, and the person up in the emergency room for the treatment and evaluation of a possible heart attack. And then there's Effexor, which is an antidepressant. And Effexor, 2% of everyone who takes Effexor ends up with clinically important chest pain. So that's really, it's incredible. Then, this is interesting, there's Faslodex. What the heck is Faslodex? Faslodex is a breast cancer treatment, a pill given to women who have breast cancer, and it causes chest pain, chest pain leading to emergency room evaluation in 7% of those who take it. As well, Femora, the same thing, another breast cancer drug that sends these ladies to the emergency room. And we also have, again, Hyzaar, another blood pressure medication. Imitrex is a drug that's used for migraine headaches. I remember when it came out in the 90s, and migraine headaches were just so frustrating because as a physician, a person had migraines, you're like, oh, my God, this is it. We're never going to be able to get rid of this migraine. They got migraines all the time. They're going to constantly be running to emergency room for migraines. And so we were so excited, so thrilled when Imitrex and Zomig came out to as miracle treatments. You take them, boom, once, and in 15 minutes, man, that headache is gone. And, of course, it does work just like that about the first or second time you take it, when the patient needs more and more and more of it. But the bottom line is Imitrex and Zomig cause chest pain in 3% of those who take it. So that is really very disappointing for doctors, but really for patients as well. And so these are drugs that will take you to the emergency room. And Indocin is a really favorite drug of people who have gout, people who have arthritis, because it is extremely, extremely powerful and really cuts that pain. But, you know, in order to get rid of that pain, you're creating another pain, which is emergency room cardiac evaluation. Lamictal, seizure medication, causes chest pain in more than 5% who take it. Ribaquin, another antibiotic, causes chest pain. And it's, again, really underscores just what a big decision it is to take an antibiotic and how important it is to stop by my website and get your report. Natural remedies so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. And that's at vitalitycapsules.com. And, of course, you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. And our call-in number is 914-338-0695. And so Lyrica, the drug is supposed to make us all very happy. We see it advertised on TV in the commercials. Also causes chest pain and can really put a crimp in your evening as you drop everything to go to the emergency room to find out what it might be. Magace, another medication used for breast cancer ladies, causes chest pain. Mevacor, this is an anti-cholesterol drug that lowers your cholesterol so you won't have heart attacks. That causes chest pain. Myocarditis, another heart drug, causes chest pain and need for evaluation. And so these things are definitely no fun. And then Novolog injection for your diabetics. That causes chest pain and sends you to the emergency room. And then Omnicef, an antibiotic. I believe that comes in liquid for the kitties, too. And this causes chest pain. It's also given, I believe, in the hospital intravenously. And then for those of you ladies who use transdermal birth control, the ortho patch can also cause chest pain. And Paxil, another antidepressant, causes chest pain. And the real, I guess you could say, conundrum here is that drugs like Plavix, for example, causes chest pain in 8.3% of those who take it. But this is a drug that's used and prescribed for people who are at exceptionally high risk of chest pain. And so when you put someone on Plavix, there's an 8.3% chance that there's a good chance that the chest pain is due to the Plavix. And, of course, you don't know. The person has a cardiac history. So now you have to admit them. You have to evaluate them. So that's a person that's not going to be able to do the short $4,800 course. This is a $12,000 experience at least. And, of course, prices are going up as we speak. And then Prenivo, a blood pressure medicine, causes chest pain 3.4% of those who take it. So we're beginning to see that just aggressively treating blood pressure is enough to create chest pain in between 2 and 4% of all the people who have blood pressure. And of course, why do you treat your blood pressure? Because you don't want to have chest pain. You don't want to spend your days in the emergency room trying to figure out if it's a heart attack or if it's Memorex. And, but instead, these very therapies that are being touted to prevent these conditions are actually causing it. And so Protonix, which is a proton pump inhibitor, also causes chest pain. Remicade, which is a drug for autoimmune diseases, causes chest pain. Risperdal, the antipsychotic and ADHD type drug, causes chest pain. And these are things people, you know, don't think about when they contemplate these drugs, things doctors don't mention to you. It's like, oh, you know, the risk is worth the benefit. And then there's tamoxifen eye drops, which are eye drops for glaucoma. They cause chest pain, and 26% of people who take it. Now, that's a lot of chest pain. And then there's drugs like Ultram is a new class of pain medication, causes chest pain in 5% of those who take it. Amwellbutrin, a antidepressant, causes chest pain in 4% of those who take it. These don't seem like big numbers, but they're absolutely huge and really fuel the whole chest pain situation. So what is a doctor to do? Well, way back when, a long time ago, when I was a solo doctor, I actually had to stop using any medication that would cause a person to get chest pain and wake me up in the middle of the night. Because, of course, I wanted to sleep through the night. Now you say, well, Dr. Daniels, didn't you care about your patients? Well, of course I cared about my patients. But according to the standard of care, caring about my patients meant prescribing these drugs and giving them chest pain. So I had to say, wait a minute. I don't think my patients really want chest pain. And, of course, I don't want them to have chest pain. So what I would do then is I started giving people a choice, offering them either the medication for these underlying conditions, whether it was blood pressure or indigestion or asthma, or even just chronic pain, so that they wouldn't need to take these medications that cause chest pain. But I have to tell you, another drug that causes chest pain is nitroglycerin. And this is a drug that's expressly prescribed to people who have chest pain of cardiac origin. And they're given this nitroglycerin to put under their tongue, and it actually causes chest pain. I mean, how cruel can that be? But this is what doctors are laboring under. The standard of care is very firm and unforgiving, both to the doctors and to the patients. So I determined that these feeder diagnoses need to be treated without drugs. At the same time, I noticed that people were getting better without drugs. And so the people who were not on drugs tended not to have chest pain. And for me, this was just an incredible revelation that if I could keep patients drug-free, that meant that their chances of having chest pain and even sudden death just went down to zero, absolutely zero. There's in 10 years of medical practice, never had a patient with chest pain who was not on drugs, a drug meaning medication. I never had a patient experience sudden death who was not on medications. Am I saying it never happens? No. But I am saying that statistically, sample size 5,000 over a period of 10 years, it seems that being on medications of any kind, also as you can see by looking at these medications, greatly increases a person's risk of having not only chest pain, but cardiac pain. So what's a person to do? Or what's a doctor to do? The first thing I did is, you have to talk to people and say, hey, what's your opinion on this? How do you feel about chest pain? I mean, is it really bothering you? Is this really a problem? Do we need to do anything about it? Or are these trips to the emergency room kind of okay with you? And so the reason it's important to really nail that down is because I would ask people to make lifestyle changes that might be, to their way of thinking, inconvenient. So that would mean that you know, they'd have to be kind of motivated. So I would say to them, hey, look, I see you had a little chest pain here. What do you say we try and prevent this? And people will say, well, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Oh, okay. So the first thing they have to do is drink water. first thing I realized is that an episode of chest pain can be brought on just by acute dehydration. So that's someone basically going out in the sun, having a good time, and not drinking water. But it's even easier, and dehydration happens even quicker when you're taking a medication, because your body needs more water to process the medication, to filter the medication out of the blood, so that the half-life of the medicine is not longer than what it would ordinarily be. It's bad enough that the drug is even in your system at all, but the fact that its half-life the doctor is expecting is 8 hours, and if you're dehydrated, half-life could be extended to 12 or 24 hours. It makes the drug more dangerous, more toxic, more likely to give you chest pain, and, of course, the doctor not realizing that you're maybe not drinking enough water, will continue to prescribe the drug at the recommended dose. And, of course, with the standard of care, the doctor can't say, well, this blood pressure drug is every day, but I think you need to take it every other day. That is not permitted. That's, like, totally bad, bad form. So your doctor's not going to be able to reduce the dose of your medication in that manner to account for the fact that you may not be drinking enough water. And so how much water is enough? Well, you've heard this before. 1 quart of water for every 50 to 60 pounds of body weight. Now, what if you have a condition like congestive heart failure? Your heart's too weak. It can't pump anything. Your doctor's told you that you have to limit your water to 1 quart, heaven forbid, 1 pint a day. The trick there is to first convert whatever you are drinking to water and then inch up itty bit by itty bit. So water was one big culprit. The next culprit was a B vitamin deficiency. And what I found is if I could talk someone into taking a half a milligram to a milligram of folic acid, that's it. I could sleep like a baby. That person was not getting chest pain, and I did not have to worry. And it just wiped out chest pain from the practice. So I give folic acid a milligram a day. Now, if you look in your health food store, you're going to find that folic acid comes in 400 micrograms, comes in half a milligram. Don't be put off by that. Just take two. 0.5 plus 0.5 is one. So that takes care of that. Now, there's one huge, huge cause of chest pain that absolutely had to be addressed, and that was constipation. People were literally plugged up from the bottom up. And these chemicals that could not find an exit would cause inflammation, which is a term even doctors use these days, inflammation, cause inflammation, spasm of their arteries, in some cases arteries in the heart, and they would get chest pain. So I found that if someone could just have 3 or more bowel movements a day, in fact, we didn't even recognize diarrhea in my practice, like if they didn't have an accident, guess what, it's okay, don't worry about it. I'm kind of joking, but really, if you have a choice between having too many bowel movements or too few, definitely lean towards too many. But 3 a day is the benchmark number. So if you have 3 or 4, that's really good, and that's enough to pretty much wipe out any concern you might even have about chest pain. And you can go visit my website, vitalitycapsules.com, and, of course, Vitality Capsules definitely help with regularity. So check those out. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. Of course, I welcome your calls and questions. We have about 15 minutes left, so I have time for a few questions if people would like. So that number is 914-338-0695. So I'll talk and say a few more things. If people have questions, they can just push one, and we'll see what I can answer, if I can answer them. So if people would have regular bowel movements, and they didn't have chest pain, and they were well hydrated and they took B vitamins, that's a very minimalistic skeleton view of things. But again, if someone is in the chest pain arena where they're having chest pain, there's a lot of stuff they're doing wrong. And having an exhaustive discussion with them to say, okay, look, these are 55 things you're doing wrong. What do you say we try and correct them? A lot of people would just be overwhelmed or intimidated. And so I started with the essentials. And then most people doing these things would just in general feel better, and they come back and say, hey, Doc, you know, I tried those things, and I feel a lot better. Is there anything else I can do? I said, well, I'm glad you asked. And so the next step is to eat more vegetables. Now, some people are into raw, some people are not, and there's all kinds of discussions on that. But what I found was getting people to have at least one salad a day, and there's a lot of discussion, what is a salad? A salad is a collection of raw green leaves, the darker the better. So we're looking at spinach here. So spinach, romaine, spring greens, any of those things are ingredients in a salad. So dark green stuff, raw vegetables. Then if you want to make it easier for you to eat, you can, you know, slice up some cucumber in there. Some people like raw onions. So in general, there's always exceptions, a raw salad is just that, a raw salad, so not combined with cooked food, so raw salad. The next thing these people would have to do, or I would recommend they do, is add some vegetables to their life, and that's some cooked vegetables. Now, if you go talk to any, a lot of health gurus out there, they're going to tell you to steam your vegetables. And I don't agree with that. I think you should boil your vegetables. And I think you should drink the water it's boiled in. Why? That's because the nutrients go into the water. And what you're after here is the nutrients and the nutrition. It's the lack of nutrition that causes the chest pain and the lack of water. So you can boil your vegetables and have them in their own broth, the broth that you boil them in, and we call that a little bit of soup. You can put a pinch of salt in there, and so much the better. So vegetables with fluid. And then there's always that sticky choice or sticky issue with meat. I have to be honest with you, if chest pain is your problem, then meat is not really on the diet. Some patients found they could get by with broiled or boiled fish every now and then, but the fried foods is not going to work, and meats in general is not going to work. So I would have to tell people to make that particular change. My question marks are showing up in blue now instead of yellow. So let me see if I can get this going here. We have a question. 6775, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I would like to know if there's anything I can do for scar tissue that I got when my dermatologist burned off a basal cell carcinoma. Now he wants to give me cortisone to take care of that scar tissue, and I don't want to do that.
Let me clarify this. Your scar is kind of thick and ugly, is that right?
Yeah, but it
okay, I understand. That's what I want to make sure.
It's on my side of my hair covers it up, so it doesn't bother me as long as it's not going to cause problems down the road. But he said the next time I came back, if it hadn't gone down by itself, he said sometimes it goes down by itself, but if it doesn't, he would give me some cortisone. And my cortisone killed my sister years ago, and I just don't like that.
Yeah, I can understand that. All right, we'll take your answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, well, a couple things going on there. First thing is the person has a scar, and the scar has swollen and raised up, and so we call that a keloid. So to get rid of it, and the steroid shot is not the answer. The steroid shot is simply going to diminish the immune system and possibly even bring back the skin cancer. So that's definitely not a solution there. The short answer is, of course, get my book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? And it shows you how to flatten out your scars and really just get rid of them. But having said that, you do need to change your diet, eat fewer meats, no processed foods, drink more water, and do enemas. That will get rid of at least 50% of your keloid. The other part is the facial that's in my book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful?, where you apply rice bran, and it's literally you do your own very mild but effective dermabrasion, and it kind of just shaves off that scar little bit by little bit without irritating you, harming you, or causing any redness. And so definitely get that book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful?, and that's at vitalitycapsules.com. And as a listener, just you make a little note, listener, and I'll give you one of my free cookbooks. Well, my cookbooks are for free. Actually, they're not free. They cost $17 a piece. But if you order the book, you'll get those free. Okay, we have another question here. Let's see if I can push the correct button. I'm going to press again. Okay, 9382, you're on the air. Hello, 9382? Okay, I'm going to silence that person. So, yeah, cortisone is definitely the enemy of good health, whether it's in a shot form, a pill form, intravenous, or even a cream form. If you apply it often enough regularly, bad things will happen. It's such a certainty that doctors are now trained that when they prescribe cortisone, that they need to prescribe vitamin D to help diminish the osteoporosis. They need to check the person for the development of early diabetes because the cortisone causes diabetes. Be on the lookout for liver tests to see if the liver gets inflamed. Check the person to see if they're getting cataracts. So all these things are expected routine effects of steroids. And when I was in medical school, I was taught that these were things that could happen if you took steroids. And maybe they would happen, maybe they wouldn't happen. But now it's understood that these are things that actually do happen when you take steroids, and you can kind of count on them. I kind of count on them. You can count on them, and you can, of course, your doctor, being a responsible doctor adhering to the standard of care, will monitor you for these complications and start the appropriate intervention or therapy once the side effects become manifest. And so it's really unfortunate that we're working with a system here that that makes things worse. Let me do station identification real quick, then we'll take one question. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. And please visit VitalityCapsules.com to get your free report, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And we're going to take this one last question here. 4182, you're on the air.
Yeah, you said birth control contribute to heart disease. Do you know if Prozac does, and does all birth control? Are there any safe birth controls?
Prozac is not birth control. It's an SSRI.
Right, I know it is, but I just was curious about it.
Yes. My understanding is that it can. You can get chest pain with it.
Okay.
Birth control is very dicey. Anytime you add external estrogen, then you increase your chances of not only heart disease, but breast cancer. So that's a real wild card. I grew up in the old days. The women's lib movement was really taking hold, 60s and 70s. Actually, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, really. But birth control was really all the rage. And part of being a woman, a grown woman, was to be able to decide not to have children. Any woman who decided to have children was considered to be not fulfilling her true potential as a human being. And of course, children would detract from that. That was the propaganda of the day. And what this did was this led many women to using birth control. First of all, delaying their first child till after the age of 30, which increases your breast cancer risk, and then even taking the birth controls at all, which increased your breast cancer risk. And now we have even stronger birth control. We get a shot for 90 days, and those are giving ladies heart attacks, as well as now we're finding that even the low-dose birth control pills are contributing to heart attacks in young women. These are people who are, you know, under 30. So having a kid is looking like pretty darn good. You know, it's not the awful thing that it used to be. When you compare, okay, are we talking about having, you know, being pregnant here and getting fat and having a baby and losing the weight later? Or are we talking about chest pain, a heart attack, and death? So there, you know, and this is really the choice that women face, and they're not being told this. I personally think that if women would use the rhythm method, or at least be aware of the rhythm method, then I could say, okay, I had intercourse during a time of my cycle that was safe, so I don't need to worry about the morning after pill. I don't need to worry about using some kind of protection. And so women could then say, okay, I'll use protection, you know, draw out your calendar and map out your days, you know, these days are in red and these are in green, figure it out. And, you know, if you're having sex on a red day or a day that you could be fertile, then use extra birth control. You know, use a condom or a diaphragm on that particular day. And on times when you're not fertile, then don't use birth control. And that would be one way women could increase their health incredibly and at the same time still have reproductive control. But I think women need more information and need to understand the true risk of these of accessing technology to achieve their reproductive goals. And so that's an area where, you know, more information would certainly be needed. So, in summary, chest pain, is it a medical emergency or is it over-medication? I don't think you can call something a medical emergency that is deadly in one case in 1,000. Just being alive and living in the United States carries a death rate, annual mortality, of 1% per year. It's 1 in 100. So if you have a condition that's deadly in 1 in 1,000, with a frequency of 1 in 1,000, and then it's being treated with drugs that multiply and worsen the condition, you almost cannot justify getting therapy for it. Now, that's just a plain old common sense, straightforward talk. But the standard of care is that any disease, even if it has a probability of 1 in 100,000, should be treated in all 100,000 people. And obviously you can see at a cost of $4,800 per treatment, that standard of care is very easily explained by the you know, financial motives of those involved. And I'm not saying the doctor, because most of that money goes to the hospital, to the drug manufacturers, and doctors only on average get 20%, if that. And, of course, all their money is W-2 or 1099, which means it's fully taxed. That's another story. But, so chest pain, if you look at the numbers, death rate of 1 in 1,000, 1 in 500, it's tough to argue it's a medical emergency. If you look at these prescription drugs that cause the chest pain, it's definitely medication-induced. Is it over-medication? According to standard of care, no, it is not over-medication. These are doctors prescribing medications according to the standard of care as they are intended to be used and fueling a massive chest pain epidemic and a cash cow for the medical system. So I hope that that has helped you understand chest pain a little more and that you'll drink more water, poop some more, and take some folic acid and just, you know, take the easy way out and have a happy life. All right, that concludes today's episode. We'll see you back next week. And I'll be sending out emails for the topic for next week. Okay, thank you very much.